Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
Okay, a listener alleges that some of the students in Suncroft School yesterday playing in the playground had problems with sheep poo. Wandering sheep from the Curragh, obviously, says the listener. And still some of the TDs are saying, our councillors are saying, I'd say more appropriately, that they can't put down a sheep grid, even though Suncroft is 2 miles from the Curragh. So maybe some parents might tell us more where their children have their problems with sheep poo going into the playground. That's not the fault of the school now. If there are wandering sheep around the place, in the past we've heard about wandering sheep into lawns and eating hedges and stuff like that. Anyway, okay, let's get underway. Keep your messages coming. 0833 97 97 97. Chat with Ciara on 045 898 999. And don't forget, you can email KFM, or you can email studio at kfmradio.com as well. Seizures of what are called synthetic cannabinoids have rocketed in the space of just 2 years. That's according to statistics released by the revenue authorities, as an addiction counsellor warned of devastation to the psyche among users. In 2018, there were just 2 detections of the drugs, while by 2019, that had gone up enormously from a value of 676 in 2018 to a value of €17,716 just 2 years ago. And that continues to rise to €51,000 worth of these cannabinoid seizures in the year 2020. Michael Guerin is a senior addiction counsellor who works at Coonawarra Treatment Centre in Athy. Michael has been with us in the past. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Clem.
Thank you for joining us again. Now, just to tell people, synthetic cannabinoids and cannabinoids, what are these about? I'm familiar with the references to cannabis and stuff like that, but you're obviously very concerned about this. I've just done a bit of research on it, and we see that synthetic marijuana compounds, as they're called, began to be manufactured and sold in the early 2000s. So we have these drugs in the natural form, as we'll call them, but now they're being manufactured in synthetic forms, and these are causing obviously very increased problems, Michael.
That's correct, Clem. Synthetic cannabinoids are basically chemicals that have been synthesized in a laboratory, and the idea is that they would mimic the effects in the brain of the user that normal herbal grown cannabis, as we are used to, would have. However, people who have used synthetic cannabinoids, and they refer to them on the street by various names, but the two most widely known would be Spice and K2. People who have used these have reported that they have had very different effects than they would have had by smoking cannabis in the normal way. And they also have reported quite profound effects after using the drug. During it, but particularly after, in terms of their mood and their mental health and so on.
Well, one of the country's leading psychiatrists echoes yours, because in a echoes your concerns, which you expressed in the Examiner as well, because in a recent article in the Indo, Sunday Indo, Professor Mary Cannon says the majority of young adults with psychosis in hospital wards in recent years will have started smoking the drug in their mid-teens, while cases of repeating drug-induced psychosis can put young adults on track to developing a chronic psychotic condition such as schizophrenia. She said it's extremely worrying and really tragic because it is preventable. So, Michael, is that mirroring your experience as an addiction counsellor in Coonawarra in Athy?
Well, I suppose we would come across a share of clients, Tim, that would have reported having psychotic episodes in the past because of their drug taking. There is certainly a worry in terms of adolescence and drug abuse, and particularly around cannabis abuse, as to what effect it may have on the developing brain. And one of the things that we have seen over the past number of years, and this is in the most general sense, we have seen a dramatic reduction in the age of first use of substances by young people. So we are getting people into treatment now who are telling us that they smoke cannabis, and in some cases, and they're not at all that rare, that they would have used cocaine by the age they were 13 or 14 years old.
My God.
And that is far too young. And like the effects of that is that we see young people then turning up in places like Coonawarra Brewery and Coonawarra Athy in their very early 20s, and they would be reminiscent of 30-something-year-old drug-dependent people that we would have treated a decade ago. Because they started so young, and because polysubstance misuse now is where it's at. In other words, we rarely meet a client now that's abusing one singular substance. There are normally three or four in the mix.
So you would agree with the College of Psychiatrists, who last week expressed grave concern on the use of cannabis amongst young people, with Professor Cannon also saying teenagers are tragically unaware of the long-term consequences of the drug use that she is now seeing in adult hospital wards. We'll talk about the long-term consequences in a moment. Tell me, Michael, what exactly constitutes a psychotic episode or psychosis?
Well, in my inexpert opinion, and it's worth remembering here, Clem, I'm not a doctor, so I'll describe it to the best of my ability. Psychosis is basically when somebody starts seeing things or hearing things that are not there. So, in other words, you could have somebody hearing voices, or you could have somebody who is seeing things that may not necessarily be there in reality.
All right, okay, so we have a person who's suffering delusions or whatever else, and obviously Professor Cannon and the College of Psychiatrists are saying these can be once-off, but also they can become repetitive.
Yes, and I suppose the worry that Professor Cannon was illustrating there in that piece was that if somebody has a history of psychosis or has had a psychotic episode, and they return to the substance that may have been a trigger or a causative factor in that psychotic episode, there is a very high likelihood that that will occur again. And if that were to continue on ad infinitum, the person could find themselves with a chronic condition from which they could not extricate themselves.
All right, so we're often told, Michael, that cannabis, you know, is essentially harmless as such or whatever else, and I use that word very carefully now. Are you of the view, from your experience, that do you regard cannabis as a gateway drug? You obviously do, because what you've just told me there a few minutes ago.
Well, I mean, I think there are a few things about cannabis. It is certainly a gateway drug, but then again, alcohol is a gateway drug also, and it's probably the greatest gateway drug of them all. But cannabis is certainly part of that polysubstance misuse milieu that we are now experiencing in modern times in the addiction rehabilitation sector. There is no such thing as a harmless mood-altering substance. Anything that is subject to misuse or abuse or addiction is potentially harmful to the person that takes it.
All right, point well made there. Now, we're talking about cannabis in its natural form, and now what we call these cannabinoids, which are synthetically adjusted in laboratories. Shades of the cocaine in one form, the powder, and then what's called crack cocaine, which has been synthetically altered in laboratories as well. And the absolute devastating damage, psychologically, physically, every which way you look, that these are causing.
Yeah, and I suppose it's worth bearing in mind when you talk about synthetic cannabinoids. They bear no relationship whatsoever to grown cannabis. Mm-hmm. They are chemicals that are totally unrelated, that are designed by the makers to mimic the effects in the user that cannabis would have on them. Incidentally, we would meet a lot of polysubstance misusers who would have abused cannabis and would have tried synthetic cannabis as part of their journey through drug taking, and may have only used it on one or two occasions because they found the effects of it so profound.
And the issue here, unlike, we'll say, I want to just alert people, I'm using the word very carefully. Let's put it this way. Unlike powder cocaine, which now is flooding the market in tons, we carried a report on this recently, and has become so cheap, and much more cheaper than the crack cocaine and stuff like that. The opposite is the case, I understand, with cannabis, because this cannabinoid stuff that's made in laboratories is much, much cheaper than natural cannabis, and thus exacerbating the problem, is it not?
Yes, and many users will tell you that they would have tried synthetic cannabis or spice on the basis that it was probably cheaper than weed. So that would have been one of the attractions for first use with spice.
One former user quoted in the article I saw, in which you're quoted, Michael, is can get a bag of it for as cheap as €10, which puts this whole possible epidemic of this drug on a different level altogether in terms of accessibility.
It does, and it's part of a wider scene there, Clem, where the general availability of drugs is quite wide anyway, particularly when you come to talking about cocaine, where cocaine is available now in every town, village, rural area and city in the country. We used to see cocaine back in the Celtic Tiger era as being the party drug of the young professionals in urban areas. Them days are gone, and quite recently a young man was quoted who was a former cocaine user in the paper, who lived in a very rural part of Munster, and he indicated quite clearly that he could get cocaine a kilometre north, south, east or west of his home. So it's safe to say that the amounts of cocaine in circulation are probably beyond all our estimation at this stage.
My God. Not alone the availability of it, which in every town and village we regularly in our news bulletins are carrying reports about major seizures, not just small-time stuff. And of course, it's linked to criminality and serious crime, including murder as well. Tell me a little more about that age profile. And, you know, when you mention kids as young as 12, 13 indulging in drug taking and substance abuse, that will alarm and ring the bell of every parent out there.
And it's not in any way an exaggeration, Clem. We are frequently meeting young men anywhere between 18 and 22, 24 years old who are reporting ages of first use to us, being in that range from 12 to 15 years of age. And it's extremely concerning, and one of the most concerning things about it is the early point at which cocaine is being introduced into this mix as well now, with young people telling us that they may have been smoking cannabis or drinking, and the person from whom they were buying cannabis was introducing them to cocaine at a very early age. And I suppose the follow-on from that is, with the expense of cocaine and what have you, these young people are very often also drawn into the distribution network at a very young age as well, which can have devastating consequences in terms of criminal convictions and that kind of thing. But because they have a habit to feed, they have no option but to become involved at the lower end of the distribution chain.
It's for dramatic stuff indeed, I have to tell you. We'll give you out some numbers in a few minutes' time if you'd like to get your pens for Narcotics Anonymous and indeed also for Coonwira in Athy. Wonderful service founded by the great and legendary Sister Concilio, and which is now spread right across the country. But we're talking, I suppose, Michael, the word pandemic is used very, very loosely. Are we talking about a pandemic of substance abuse across this country now? Not just in what we're talking about, cannabis, heroin, cocaine, but in terms of alcohol and other substances as well.
Well, I suppose the hallmark of the past 12 months and the successive lockdowns over COVID-19 in that is that we are hearing of a lot of clients inquiring from us now about treatment who believe their alcohol consumption has crossed over into problematic levels. And they are attributing that, rightly or wrongly, to the stress and strain and isolation of successive lockdown periods, isolation and unemployment in some cases. So we're quite concerned about that as an emerging trend as we hopefully at this stage exit the lockdowns and the restrictions from COVID-19 become less onerous.
Okay, Michael, those numbers, by the way, thank you, Owen, for Narcotics Anonymous, Dublin, 01-672-8000, 672-8000, and for Coonwira in Athy, it's an extraordinary centre, I have to say, that has spread its tentacles right across the country, doing such amazing work, 059-863-1493, that's 059-863-1493, and for Narcotics Anonymous, 01-672-8000 if you've been impacted by our discussion with one WhatsApper saying to us now, drugs have destroyed my family. I have a 22 years old daughter who has epilepsy and ADHD and she depends on drugs. I've done my best to try and get help for her and she refuses. I had to pull her out, which broke my heart. She went to assault me after my operation, stole my son's confirmation money, and my family is totally destroyed. That, Michael, in a couple of lines, fairly graphically, and summarises the destruction, not just to the addict, but indeed the ripple effect out amongst our family and beyond. Is Michael gone on me there?
No, I'm still with you, Clem, and again, that very heartfelt and sad text that listener sent in would be stories of that nature, unfortunately, are things that we would come across on a regular basis in Coonburra, where the entire family network has been profoundly affected by one person's drug use.
Indeed. Michael Guerin, Senior Addiction Counsellor at Coonburra. If you've been impacted by our discussion, either of those numbers, we'll repeat them again in a couple of minutes' time. Michael, thank you so much for your time. Regards to you and all your colleagues in Coonburra, in Athy, and indeed to all those carrying out such important work at rehab centres right around the country. Great talking to you again, Michael.
Thanks very much, Kim.
You're more than welcome. Okay, let's change tack altogether. And good morning, Councillor Brendan Wise. How are you?
Morning, Clem. Not so bad.
Right, let's get to some of your emotions that you brought to the Clane Maynooth Municipal District meeting recently. And we'll begin with number 15 on the clore, if I can get to it, which is, you want to know about the funding stream for the Grand Canal Greenway. Funding stream for who?
To complete the Grand Canal Greenway. So we already have a number of greenways in Kildare now, including some sections of the Barrow Blue Way, which runs from Lowtown here near me all the way to Athy. And any time I'm near the Grand Canal, I see plenty of walkers on it, so it's great to see. But this Grand Canal Greenway is the most important in my mind because it runs all the way from the Grand Canal Dock in Dublin to Shannon Harbour in Offaly. So the potential for tourism here and a boost to the local economy in West Kildare is massive. And we already have funding of $1.7 million to build a section from the Dublin border to Salins. We recently had an unsuccessful application to the Department of Rural and Community Development to build the remaining section. But the council team behind this project, Clem, a very strong team, and their next application, they're saying there to me in the meeting, will be going to the Department of Transport, who has fully supported the Greenway in the past. So we're hopeful that the Department of Transport will recognise the importance of the route and support the building of it soon.
All right, two motions related in terms that you brought to the meeting, Brendan. You wanted an update on the development of the public realm improvement plans for Robertstown, Killinagh and Derrin Turin National Schools. And also you asked at the same meeting, would the council provide a report that lists the total number of units procured for social housing in each of the rural settlements in Allanwood, Kyledove, Robertstown and Derrin Turin? Well, first of all, the public realm improvements in Robertstown, Killinagh and Derrin Turin National Schools.
Yeah, well, the entrances of Robertstown, Derrin Turin, especially Killinab, which is on a bad bend there close to the entrance of the Dreid landfill, they get very busy at school opening and closing times. So the council asked for a design team to come up with a layout for these roads and traffic calming measures here. And they're saying they don't have the final proposal just yet, but hoping to have it in the next few weeks. They will be issued for public consultation, so everyone will get a chance to provide feedback on those plans.
All right, what about social housing units, the procurement of those in Allanwood, Kyledove, Robertstown and Derrin Turin in the last 3 years and in 2021 to date?
Yeah, well, this question should be taken in conjunction with a motion Nadine came I had in the same meeting, and this was where I asked the council what measures are taken to ensure that they're not affecting the supply to private buyers. So you can see from the figures that I got from the council, they're doing a good job in getting social housing in the villages. They've got 140 homes, including 52 in Derrin Turin and 45 in Allanwood. And it's great to see, because I know personally many of the families that were able to move into these homes. But on the other hand, there appeared to be a lack of balance here, because from my local knowledge on the ground, I know there were not that many more than 52 new homes built in Derrin Turin, and not many more than 45 in Allanwood either. So the council has secured at least 90% of the new home supply, by my estimate. Now, I did read in the Irish Times that the emergency legislation being discussed by the government may address this and may prevent the bulk buying. But on the other hand, one other way we can address it, I suppose, is to encourage people to build their own homes and make it easier for people to build their own homes in the countryside. So, I'm working with a family recently, Clem. They returned from Australia and they found a site and they had the finances to build their home. They're finding it hard to get planning permission. Their local village is there in Turin, there's no houses to buy there, and there won't be actually for a while because the waste treatment plant is at capacity. So they're actually thinking of returning to Australia. So, look, we're looking at the next county development plan now. I think it needs to be more biased towards helping private home buyers and helping people build their own home, you know, so...
I think, basically, that your Fine Gael colleague, Brendan Weld, also has a motion on the council in regards to planning applications. How many planning applications have been approved or otherwise in, basically, in the general municipal district and generally in North Kildare as well? It is a problem. People trying to get planning permission to build in their own areas. And you reference indeed to what the government might propose to deal with cuckoo funds, which we've been discussing extensively. Now there are mentions that maybe of increasing stamp duty to make it less attractive for these cuckoo funds to buy, but some of the figures emerging showing that they have built or that cuckoo funds have spent 53 million euro every year in the last couple of years buying up homes around this country. So it's not a new problem indeed, and it needs to be addressed urgently. The government saying that they will do so in the coming days. Fine Gael councillor Brendan Wise, thank you for your time, Brendan, of the Clane Maynooth Municipal District, and we'll be heading back there later in the programme when we'll hear from Councillor Paul Ward. We'll also be with the Naas Municipal District this morning. But after the break, we're going to hear good news, apparently, for Selbridge Schools.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
Okay, welcome back. And Fianna Fáil TD for Kildare North, James Lawless. Good morning, James.
Good morning, Clem. How are you?
I'm very well. James, first of all, let's deal with that good news, by the way, for Kildare. Apparently, a progress in relation to the acquisition of a site for three Selbridge schools. How much progress?
Yeah, so look, this has been a long-running issue in Selbridge and surrounds. The three schools, St Patrick's National School, Selbridge Community College, and St Raphael's Special School. Between the three schools, they have upwards of 1,200 pupils and almost 200 staff, teachers, principals, management, etc. So, look, it's a long-running saga in Selbridge, trying to get the site for the new school and schools, trying to get them centred onto one complex. And the good news is that the parents and the management teams of all three schools have been very proactive on this. They met myself and the other TDs of the constituency before Christmas. I know they met with local councillors, and they've been running a campaign for some time. And I would have spoken to the minister continuously, actually, ever since that meeting. And the announcement was made yesterday that the Department of Education have now gone, I suppose you could say, sale agreed on a site in Donnacumber. The legal process has to kick in, the conveyancing and the formalities still follow, but there's very, very solid progress on securing that site, going in on that site, and I suppose moving forward. So that will give the three schools a new home. It will give them a modern home, new modern facilities, new modern buildings, some shared, I suppose, points as well on the campus. But all of them have been struggling in different ways. Look, great schools, great management, but in so much dilapidated facilities to date. And I suppose the uncertainty that's dragged them for years, where do they end up long term? So that's addressed today. Really good news, a good investment by the Department of Education. And good to see progress being made on that front.
Timeline, any idea?
I would expect the conveyancing piece to be done, I suppose, by the summer, you know, fairly quickly. You know, I suppose always with these things, something can crop up right away, or a title issue or a question or whatever, but I wouldn't think it would take terribly long. And I suppose once that's done, they need to get planning permission, which is where the councillors come in terms of the new complex, the new build. That might take a year or two. And look, I suppose they won't be starting building, you know.
James, in fairness, as you know, and I know, we're talking years in terms of this.
Is this a co-location? I would imagine, yeah.
And would this be a co-location of primary and post-primary schools?
Yes, so you have St Patrick's, which is a primary school, a national school. You have Selbridge Community College, which is a secondary school. And St Raphael's is a special school, dealing with a number of age groups, but with very special needs. So it is. It's sort of a coming together of different types, different ages, and different educational needs as well.
Okay.
But very positive. And all three school communities working hand in glove for the last number of years together. And indeed, when they met with us, and there are other politicians recently, very much coming in as a team. I look forward to developing that campus and working together and sharing it as a team as well.
All right. We have been covering extensively here the whole issue in Mullen Park Maynooth and other issues around these cuckoo funds coming in. And we've spoken to various people, including the Taoiseach in the last couple of days, Ona Brin of Sinn Féin, Dr. Rory Hearn, Associate Professor of Social Policy at Maynooth. And we've heard from various councillors like Angela Feeney as well. Listeners were querying why we hadn't heard from yourself or Bernard Durkin. What's your own, and why hadn't we actually?
Because you didn't ring me.
Well, do we have to ring you all the time, or can you? James Lawless, hold on a second. Hold on a minute, James. Hold on a second. You are very, very adept at sending out press releases with the good news, and fair play. Yeah. Now, what about press releases with the bad news? I didn't see any from you.
Right. Well, if you must know, my father-in-law passed away last week. So
I'm sorry to hear that. Okay, I'm sorry.
I'm back in action this week. Well, no, but I mean, if you ask the question, and look, I don't mean to make it personal, but, you know, I was actually out of action for RT Drive Time rang me the same day that the story broke. I was actually standing I was at the funeral, so I wasn't available for a couple of days. But, you know, I always respond to media. I did a piece on News I Won yesterday for RT. I'm delighted to talk to you this morning, and I'll always take a call from, certainly from KFM, my local radio.
I know you do. So, what do you make of the whole Cuckoo Funds thing?
Look, I suppose it's a complex issue. First of all, I don't like it, okay, I suppose putting it simply, because my constituents and my neighbours and my friends and their families are in the same boat trying to find accommodation. It's not that many years ago since I was in the similar boat getting married, trying to find a place. My own children will be coming to that stage in due course. And I know lots of friends and neighbours and their families are trying to do it. So the idea that you're trying to save a deposit, trying to get into a home, get into a property, and it's swept up en masse by a cuckoo fund, first of all, I suppose it's offensive to anyone that has those rightful aspirations. However, the solution is not simple, because there's what we call an economics of butterfly effect. And effectively, if you change one moving part, you can very easily upturn the entire system. So I read in the Business Post on Sunday gone by, the second week of the story, I missed the first week for reasons that escape, but it said that the other bidder for that estate, one of the other bidders was an approved housing fund, which effectively is a social housing agency. I'm not sure which particular one it was. So they were also in the mix, and then you had private buyers. So you could have had a situation where the Cuckoo Fund didn't get it, but the houses equally weren't available.
But the Cuckoo Fund was always going to get it, James, for the simple reason. The Cuckoo Fund... Just let me put this to you. The Cuckoo Fund Roundhill has a bank load of €100 billion to spend. We've seen where Cuckoo Funds have spent €53 million a year buying up housing in this country since 2017. There is no way an approved housing association would have had the funds to buy those houses, nor Kildare County Council, which was also in negotiations to get them, and will now be end up renting them at exorbitant rents. On top of that, no chance at all for young couples or single parents or anybody else going in to buy those, because the reality is those Cuckoo funds are bidding prices so high that every time it becomes an aggregate thing, whatever anybody else will bid, the Cuckoo Fund has the wherewithal to bid much higher than them and take them out, which they've done. Now let's move it on, because we know that Cuckoo Funds will come in and build apartment blocks and stuff like that, and we don't want to clear them out of the market altogether. But surely a scenario that your government needs to address is these Cuckoo Funds not paying rent tax on the rental income, not paying capital gains tax when they dispose of them. That has to be addressed. Surely a reserved number of houses on any development should be set aside, for example, 30%. The question is, the government of which you're a representative, and indeed the chairman of various committees, says it will do so within days, but they better do so sooner than later.
Yeah, well, look, it's been obvious to me since 2014 when I was first elected to the County Council that we had a housing crisis. I think it's obvious to anybody that even takes a very casual look at the market, or certainly anyone that has any closeness to it, that this is a major issue. I suppose briefly the point I was making with the Cuckoo Funds, not to, in any way that they're a good thing or that, you know, that there's any support for them, but that there are multiple different... So if the Cuckoo Fund wasn't there, it wasn't a case that suddenly all the homes were immediately available to first-time buyers, because the council was also in the mix, and I have had complaints in other estates where the council bought houses en masse, and I've had other complaints where approved housing bodies have gone in and bought houses en masse. And similarly, first-time buyers have said, God, we couldn't even get a look in. Now, of course, you'd prefer the council or the approved housing body to the Cuckoo Fund, but I suppose what I'm saying is it's hard to put the jigsaw together, because for every bit that you put in, some of the bit falls out, and you go, God, we didn't expect that consequence. So I suppose they just have to be careful how they do it. Now, time is not on their side, and there's no excuse for any kind of delay here. The new government's in position about 10 months, and we had the biggest housing budget in the history of the state. Even with COVID and all that, housing was the number one in the budget just gone, and the most ambitious housing targets. Now, COVID have delayed things there as well in terms of getting building back and running, but they did try to get building back as one of the first things. And what I've always said, and I don't think we need any kind of complicated economics to discuss this, supply, supply, supply. The more houses on the market for sale, to private hands, to first-time couples, to first-time buyers, the more social housing through the county council, affordable housing to everybody. And actually, while this thing is wrong with the Cuckoo Funds coming into Mullen Park, of course it's wrong, it wouldn't even be commented on in a normal market. Because if we had a dozen other new estates beside it that people are browsing in and out about them all, It wouldn't be such a big deal.
But James, you're a bright guy. Who's been in government for the last 40, 50, 60 years? Fianna Fáil up until 2011. Fine Gael then onwards. And then now Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. The two parties currently in government have shared government for decades in this country. And the mess that we're in regards to housing... Hold on a second, let me finish my question. The mess we're in regards to housing in this country goes directly back to the way the government policies, or lack thereof, that have been implemented by both Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil over decades. The buck stops with yourselves.
I don't agree with that claim. First of all, I don't accept the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael government to pursue the same policies. I would say, and I say this, made this point on a different programme yesterday, Fine Gael have a slightly different outlook, that they have probably a more private sector attitude, whereas Fianna Fáil traditionally have always been public housing led.
So you're in government with them. Don't mind the differences. You're in government with them, propping up each other.
Yeah.
You did
but
for the last couple of years. The confidence and supply. Hold on, James. Fianna Fáil propped up Fine Gael Fianna Fáil propped up Fine Gael for the last number of years under the confidence and supply agreement. You are now equal parties in government. You are responsible for dealing with the housing crisis that we're in, whether you like it or not.
Is that a question?
Sorry, yes, it is a question.
It's been very hard to come back in the last few minutes. Okay, you asked me a couple of things. First of all, you asked me to go back over the last 60 years. Then you asked me about where we are right now, and then you asked me about the confidence in supply. So I think, to be honest, what our listeners want to know is when are we going to build bloody houses? And that's what I want to know as well, and that's what I asked Dara Bryan last night. But just to very quickly deal with the question, 60 years ago, Fianna Fáil was building houses to beat the band. If you go through, take my own village, Sanas, if you go through Hillview, Bridges Terrace, if you go into Naysarto Road, all of the big local authority developments, go up to Maynooth, any of them, they were built by Fianna Fáil governments to the 40s, 50s, 60s and beyond. There was huge investment in housing. It was traditionally a bedrock of Fianna Fáil governments all the way through. Let's slip back a little bit, probably after the 80s and 90s, and the economy changed, people were doing a little bit better, the idea of the state doing everything for them, we got more of a mixed economy, people had different jobs, multinationals came into the scene, people had bigger pay packets, and things changed a little
bit. All right, I got the history lesson. Okay, what should we do? What should your government do now?
Well, it should do exactly what it is doing. Dara O'Brien is bringing through the Affordable Housing Bill right now. It's actually going through the Dáil as we speak. I was up on it last night.
Disastrous bill. It's been criticised. It's been criticised by the ESRI, the Central Bank. All have said that bill is completely outside of reality. All the opposition parties.
The opposition parties have successfully got a lot of noise, and they're very adept at social media, and I see one of them is running 50 different ads on housing right now, using money that they've gotten from God knows where. But anyway, the Affordable Housing Bill, there's a controversial element about shared equity, okay? And that's one of many elements.
Disastrous element to the bill is the shared equity. You know that, James. You're a barrister.
I take the points made by ESRI and others. It's only one element. There are many other elements in that bill, many of which are very solid, many of which will deliver bulk stock to the market, which will increase supply. The bottom line is, the more houses that get built, the more are available to everybody, and prices are beginning to go the other direction. Because we all know, scarce supply can only mean one thing.
All right, high prices. All right, James. What prompted me, by the way, to ask you that is, and I'd ask you to be brief in this comment, you were quoted in the Sunday Independent as saying something to the effect that the housing minister that you're defending there and the government's policy that you're defending, that he had a good way with builders and developers. He seemed to get into their heads and get on well with them. It wasn't exactly maybe the kind of endorsement that Dara O'Brien wanted.
Well, what would you want from a housing minister? I mean, you want an education minister that gets on with the teachers. You want a justice minister that knows how to get into forecourts and speak their language. You want a housing minister that can talk to the lads. And actually, I went to a site in Naas with Dara O'Brien before Christmas. First time a Fianna Fáil cabinet minister has been in Naas for nearly 20 years, unfortunately, because we've been out of government for that long. And he was the first of the current team to come down. Very grateful that he did. We inspected.